Welcome. Are you ready to take a journey with me into knowledge, enlightenment, and discovery? Then let's journey again together. This is your host, Rebecca Jernigan, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Good afternoon. I am Rebecca Jernigan, your tour guide into discoveries and information. Today, we have a return guest, Dorothy Leeds. You know what? She is always a joy and so much fun to have on the show. We're going to get back to Dorothy in just a moment. But I want to take just a few seconds here to read to you an email that I have recently received. It starts out, Dear Rebecca, I'm a new listener to your show. My name is Clara. I'm 26 and I live in Portugal. I've been practicing neo-paganism for about 6 years now, although I've always been very in touch with the occult, and now realizing I can heal at a distance. Not serious illnesses yet, but I can certainly cleanse people from their troubles. I picture them, I hold that visualization, and I try to feel their pain. See where they need bad stuff to be taken, stress, envy, whatever people want to call it. And sometimes people are already totally clean. Others, they have these little blockages that I try to fill with white light. And even at a distance, and with that, people I don't know, I'm spreading light on them. It's been working like a charm. I'm writing to thank you for the show. Now I'm at work and can't remember the name of your guest. It was the ex-chiropractor that made you really laugh hard. Because there was this part where you talked about the light always being stronger than darkness. And that's exactly how I've always felt. People say to me, you've cleansed that person, so now you must be filled with all that astral goo. But I don't. I feel that when I'm doing good, I get filled with good things. Even if I just took the stress out of someone. And you guys were the first ones I heard that didn't talk about grounding or cleansing afterwards. Congratulations for a very informative and entertaining show. Kisses, Clara. Wow, thank you, Clara. That was really, truly a kind and wonderful letter. I wish Clara the best, and I know that just by this example of this letter, that there are people out there that can really benefit from my guest, and I'm very appreciative of those who let me know. Okay, getting back to guests. Dorothy Leeds, much in demand motivational speaker, is also a communications consultant. We're going to be back with more of Dorothy in just a moment.
Have questions about your love life or your job? Get your private psychic reading from Rebecca. Call to schedule an appointment at 1-888-958-2768. That number again is 1-888-958-2768.
Journeys with Rebecca is sponsored by Fate Magazine. Published continuously since 1948 with a broad array of true accounts of the strange and unknown. Subscribe today at fatemag.com.
More than talk, it's entertaining insight and discoveries. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. And as promised, we have Dorothy Leeds here with us today. I'd like to welcome you to the show, Dorothy.
Thank you.
You know, what a fun thing this is going to be. We're going to be talking about quite a few different things. But before we get into the newest thing that we're going to talk about, if you'll take just a moment and talk about the other two books, because for some people that haven't followed the show since its inception, you have been on a couple of times, and we've talked about those other things. We'll hit back on them a little bit later. But I thought we'd kind of give everyone kind of an idea of where, what kind of a background, as it were, that you kind of come from.
Well, it's a long story, but I'll make it short. Because I actually have had five careers, and I've started out as a high school teacher, went on to Broadway, and then I started a knitwear company, and then I went as an advertising, and finally I got involved in giving presentations and workshops, and then wrote a book, and then I wrote a play. So that's, in a nutshell, that's where I started from and where I am now.
Wow. Now, is that not glorious, though? That's glorious.
It's been quite an interesting journey, and you know, since I write books on communication, and primarily I think my most unique aspect of my writing is on questions, because nobody else really writes about them. And all of the things that happened to me because of questions. I kept moving from career to career because I kept asking myself, is this where you want to wind up? Because, I mean, I think if more people ask that question, they would not wind up in dead-end jobs or doing things just to make money. They would look to do things that could fulfill them as well as make money. I think there's nothing wrong with making money. But I feel it's really important to love what you do so that you can't wait to get up every morning and that your vacations are just as much fun as your work. I mean, I should say your work are just as much fun as your vacations.
Right. Well, and you know, that's really a wonderful viewpoint to have in life, and I would agree. We talked about this the time you were on the show about your what's the name of that question book again? I don't have it at my fingertips.
Okay, well, I've written a few books on questions, but the two that are still in print and are most popular are the Seven Powers of Questions.
Seven Powers of Questions. I almost had that right and by memory.
Right, right. And then I also wrote, my first book that I ever wrote was on questions, which was called Smart Questions, The Essential Strategy for Successful Managers. And that book, Rebecca, I am very proud to say, has been in print since 1987, and it's still going strong.
Woohoo!
And it still gets 5 stars on Amazon.
Well, you know what? As a person that read your book, Seven Powers of Questions, I don't think I ever actually got a copy of the first one, but I know I did on that one. It was absolutely such a fabulous book that I had to have you on because it was like, there are so many things in that book that I could just like click, 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 and I was like, oh, people have to know about this. And, you know, getting back to what we were talking about is questioning what you are doing in your life. You know, absolutely questioning what you do for a living and asking yourself, just like you said, is this really what I want to do?
Right.
Do I want to just go to work and do this all day long and then go home and then just feel dead tired all the time?
Right.
Because there's a part of our lives that are not fulfilled.
Right. And you know what happens if so many people feel that they're in a dead end and they can't get out of it? I met a man once at a party. He worked for a very well-known organization, and he was very unhappy there. But he felt he had developed a very high style of living, and he needed to stay there because he had this family to support in this very elaborate style. And I think it was just an excuse because he was a bright, talented man and could have found something to do that he would have enjoyed as well as making money. People seem to feel, you know, we as Americans tend to see the world in black and white. And there's no reason why you can't both make money at something that you enjoy.
And, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up because I just had a conversation with a lady yesterday, and she was in a job a few years back. She had a terrible accident. She was actually hit by a truck, and she was no longer able to do the job that she was in before. So at some point during the course of her rehabilitation and, you know, healing and just getting better, she said, well, I can't do this job anymore. I need to do something else. And she went into an entirely different field. She got so energetic about it, so pumped up about it, because it was a creative force within her. And she's now making money doing something that she loves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was like, I was so afraid because my other job paid me good money. But she says, I'm actually making more money than I did in my job, and I love every single day of it.
Well, I think that's the ideal situation. And you know, that there are people, like, I mean, you take somebody, for example, like Bill Gates.
Yes.
Take Bill Gates. Now, I'll bet you if Bill Gates weren't the richest man in the world, he would still be fiddling with computers and he would still be doing things. I mean, he's somebody who found it. I mean, he's a real nerdy guy, actually.
Yeah.
And, I mean, but he found a way. He got himself some good people around him who were, I think, very smart and very ambitious, and they saw the potential of what he was doing. But, I mean, he would still be playing with computers. All these guys that play baseball now, I would say more than 3/4 of them would still play baseball at low salaries because they love the game.
Right.
But it's nice that they're making all this money. But
well, yeah, I'm sure they feel like that anyway.
I'm sure they do. I do think that an awful lot of people do what they do because they love it, and the money is secondary. I mean, look at artists. I love the ballet. look at all these ballet dancers that work so very hard. They would work, I mean, they used to work hard when they were making no money.
Right.
Barely getting by because they love to dance. So I think that people should ask themselves the question, am I fully utilizing my potential? You know, I do a motivational speech called The Power of Questions, and I end the talk with this tapping into our own potential. I ask the audience, see, how many people here feel that you have untapped talents and potential? And most of the hands go up, and I say to the ones that don't, I say, even though your hands didn't go up, I know inside you feel you do, because we all do. We all feel we can do so much more, that we've got so much more inside of us. And the only tool we have, Rebecca, to get this out is to ask, answer, and act on our own self-questions.
Correct.
And that's our only tool. That's the only way we move to the next level.
And Dorothy, do you have, you know, because, you know, most people are rooted in this, I don't know if it's really necessarily a fear, but there's obviously a block or an obstacle that I obviously can't make any more money than what I'm doing at my, you know, JLB, you know, if they feel like they're very well paid, or if they feel like they haven't gotten enough education, what would you tell somebody in that situation?
Well, you know, as much as I would love, since my name is Dorothy, I can't click my magical red shoes together and give everyone a boost of confidence. But ideally, people wind up with a lot of low self-esteem and not feeling that they can do more. And then they get into this complacency of accepting less rather than trying to find more. And there's, I mean, I wish I could, you know, click the shoes together and just give the whole world all the confidence they would need to succeed and to find things that they really love to do and to earn money at it. But I do think people have to just push themselves and say, you know, the thing that was a big motivator for me was always saying, if I don't do this, how am I going to feel?
Right.
I mean, if I don't try, if I don't go to that job interview, if I don't give that speech, if I don't, how will I feel? And you know what happens? That's how you lose your self-esteem.
Well, that's a very true statement.
Every time you don't do something that you feel you should do or want to do because you're afraid, you lose self-confidence. You know, we started talking about my book, The Seven Powers of Questions, but let's just talk a minute about my book, Power Speak, because it's related to this subject. One of the things I ask when I do workshops on the subject, which is Power Speak, which is the Engage, Inspire, and Stimulate Your Audience, is the subtitle. I ask the audience, the group I'm working with, what are the things you hope to gain by being a better speaker? And do you know, almost the first thing 95% of the people say is confidence. So I ask them, where does confidence come from? And they give me all kinds of answers, that it comes from within, that it comes from experience. All of those things are right. It comes from all of those things. But I say to them, do you get confidence from doing things that are easy or difficult? And they stop and they think and they say, difficult. Well, I say, how do people perceive public speaking? And they say, difficult. And I say, there you go. If you get better at public speaking, you're going to gain more confidence because people think it's difficult. It's the same thing in life. It's not easy to make changes. People get used to things. They get comfortable. They get complacent.
And that's true.
And people look at all the people that stay in bad relationships, and I've stayed in a bad relationship for a long time myself because
I think we all have.
I couldn't break out of it.
Right.
But, I mean, so none of this is easy. If it were easy, everyone would be fulfilled and happy. And, you know, I mean, I'm talking about several of the subjects we're going to be talking about, but in my new play, Good Lessons from Bad Women, one of the characters in my play is Eleanor Roosevelt. Now, you know, the world revered and adored Eleanor Roosevelt, but she became Eleanor Roosevelt with great pain, great struggle, and great unhappiness. But she kept forging ahead and pushing ahead and not letting herself be put down. And she had no confidence as a young girl. Do you know that her family thought that she was dull and ugly and inferior? And she had an aunt who actually told her that no one will ever want you. And look who she wound up marrying.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there you go.
She had a terrible life, and she felt she always felt she was ugly. And she was so timid. But little by little, she came into her own. And not because someone handed it to her. She worked hard to become Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yes, and a woman that is certainly remembered.
Remembered and revered.
Yes, exactly, respected.
By the whole world. Do you know that, I mean, because I've been doing this play, I studied all of the characters that I use in the play, but I watched several documentaries on Eleanor Roosevelt. And I can even talk like Eleanor Roosevelt, I mean, after all, my dear. So, I mean, so I really do become Eleanor Roosevelt. But she was ambassador to the UN, and she traveled hundreds and thousands of miles to bring good cheer and good works to people. I mean, she was just truly an amazing, amazing woman. And they made a marriage, even though they didn't have any passion for each other anymore. They still had a good, workable, caring relationship.
And, you know, and that's important for who she was at the time.
Well, she needed to, she belonged to the world, not to any one person.
Exactly. Well, here's a story for you. It's my own personal story. You may find this hard to believe, but when I was growing up, I was absolutely unable to speak with anyone. I stuttered. I stumbled over words. I became embarrassed all the time. You know, my face would just flush. I would just blush all the time. And sometimes if I got really nervous, I would just talk inanely about nothing at all. And that went on until I hit high school. I actually was just an awful communicator. I just could not speak to people. And if there was more than one person standing there, I was just so uncomfortable in my own skin. It was just awful. And I had this, I took a speech class. And the point behind the speech class was to learn about writing speeches and giving speeches. So I made myself take that class. And I gave a speech, and at that time the Vietnam War was on, and I still remember the title of the speech, The Loneliest Person in the World. And it was about the soldiers over there that were without their families and their home and in a foreign country and in this war and, you know, the death and everything that was all going on around them and the bombs and all of that. And I got an A++ on that. And it was the first time, and I mean, I sat down and wrote that speech, Dorothy, and it took me, oh, I don't know, probably a better part of a couple of hours to write and rewrite this speech. And I felt like I knew it like the back of my hand, got up there, and I delivered that speech, and that was what broke that cycle for me.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That is a one, you know, people listening who are feeling unconfident and scared, that's a wonderful story. It has all the elements of success. You had something to overcome. You worked hard to do it, and you took a risk, and you took a chance. That's what people who don't want to do that, you know, unfortunately, you're going to stay mired where they are.
And that's the whole point behind the stories here, is to let people know, you know, if this little country girl here can get up and do it, then anyone can.
Well, I'm proud of you. I think that's wonderful. But it goes to show that public speaking is an enormous boost to people's confidence.
Yes, even if you don't use it for public speaking, you know, as a career, you know, obviously I didn't go into the public speaking at that point, although I have given many speeches in my time and workshops and seminars, but it started back in high school, and I didn't use it for 20-some years. But that's what started the whole thing. And, you know, high school, just like any other thing, is probably one of the worst, because you got all the peer pressure on you from all the people that you know, are around 24/7, it feels like. So it's quite interesting. So I urge any of you, and you know, you have really good books. And before we end our interview today, we're going to talk about how people can get a hold of them and how they can get a hold of you. And, you know, of course, you're always on my website, that kind of thing. So, but we're going to specifically talk about that so that people can at least get your books and start looking at them, and maybe that will spurn them into questioning what's really going on in their life, so they themselves can look and go, you know what, I am more than what I am at this moment. And maybe it'll help them, you know, take that step forward.
That's a wonderful question, Rebecca. Am I more than what I really am? I like that.
Oh, well, thank you. You may use that.
Oh, no, you should use it. It's excellent.
Okay, I think I will. That's really great. Well, thank you. Coming from a professional, I feel pretty flattered with that. Dorothy, that's great. Well, you know, we've got a couple more minutes left in this segment. Why don't we go ahead and set up what it is that I actually called you about to have you back on the air for, because we touched on it briefly when you was talking about Eleanor, but one of the things that we're going to be talking about today was women like her. So maybe you can set that up for us.
All right. Well, this is, since we started talking about questions, one of the things I asked myself, I guess about a year and a half ago, was, am I really utilizing my potential? Am I doing everything I want to do? And I kept, you know, I wasn't really unhappy, but it was nagging at me a little bit. I just felt like I should be doing something else. Not totally something else, because I really like what I do, but I felt something was missing. And one morning, this is really exactly how it happened. One morning I woke up, and in my brain as I woke up was this title, Good Lessons from Bad Women. It was just there. I didn't think about what kind of a play I wanted to write, or even if I wanted to write a play, but because that little unrest was in my mind, my subconscious was working, I guess, and then that appeared in my head. And so I started asking questions. What can I do? How should I pursue this? It was as if it was an omen. I was supposed to do something. So I called the NYU School of Drama, and I live in New York City, so I called the NYU School of Drama, and I called the Juilliard School, and the Juilliard School responded first. And the man there said, you know, I have a really talented young playwright, and I think she might be perfect for this project, because I didn't think that I could write a really, and I know I'm good at writing books, but I didn't think that I knew enough about how to write a really good play.
Yeah, plays are very, very, oh, they are just totally tricky. Different, aren't they, Dorothy?
Yeah, very difficult.
Just like writing a movie script is also different than what, it's not like sitting down and just,
exactly.
You know, writing a letter. Yeah.
Right. So I knew my limitations, I knew that, and I also knew that I didn't have the time to actually write the play. So I collaborated with this lovely playwright, and we put together a play called Good, you know, we use my title, Good Lessons from Bad Women in History, and the play starts off with me talking about how I...
Well, hold on, and we'll bring them back and tell them how it starts off, so hold on just one second.
Want to know what's on my coffee table? The latest issue of Fate Magazine. Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, Fate Magazine provides a one-of-a-kind reading experience. Published continuously since 1948, Fate is the only publication to consistently supply its loyal readership with a broad array of true accounts of the strange and unknown, from psychics and spiritualists to archaeological hotspots and fringe science, from authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations to readers' personal mystic experiences. Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Fate's unique mix serves the growing audience of people seeking both answers and entertainment. Find out more about Fate, and to subscribe, log on to www.fatemag.com or call 1-800-728-2730.
Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, it's easy to keep up with all the latest Journeys news, my upcoming guests. Just sign up to receive the Journeys newsletter. It's free, and you will never receive any junk mail. Your email is never sold or distributed. So keep up to date the easy way. Just log on to my website, journeyswithrebecca.com, and at the bottom of the main page, you'll see the box. Type in your email address, and you're done. And once a week or so, you'll receive all the latest Journeys news.
Hey, I'm Bonnie Raitt. Remember how excited you were as a kid to go back to school at the end of the summer? Seeing old friends, making new ones, getting new books in a new locker, a clean slate. And music class, that special room where you went to sing and perform with your friends and learn all sorts of interesting stuff about great composers and instruments and different kinds of music. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They helped spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. Know what? I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them and make sure they get involved with music in school this year.
A back-to-school PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, it wires the brain for learning.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. We're here with Dorothy Leeds, and boy, did we leave you guys hanging from the first segment. So, Dorothy, if you could, why don't we pick it up where you left off?
All right. Well, I was sharing how I went on this journey, not with Rebecca, but with bad women. But what happened, what I told the playwright as we started working on this was that I didn't want to have just a series of monologues. I wanted to be a little beyond that, because I find going to seeing people just, you know, stand up and do famous women from history or something, and there's really no plot or anything, I didn't find it as interesting. So what happened is we developed a plot. I start off talking about how I got interested in bad girls, and Eleanor Roosevelt interrupts me. And I have this argument throughout the rest of the play. She keeps interrupting me because she's this very good woman, and I'm, you know, getting interested in all these naughty women. and so at the play then resolves itself at the end that I sort of become Eleanor Roosevelt. I mean, it's staged in a very imaginative way, because since I'm the only person, I have to, do everything. So I turn a quarter of away from the audience when I'm Eleanor Roosevelt. So toward the end of the play, I stay facing the audience, and I become Eleanor Roosevelt as I go into her monologue.
Oh.
So I have all these, and I wanted women that, I wanted some well-known ones, because I think people like to learn more about famous people that they are familiar with. I also wanted some women who weren't well-known. And interestingly enough, I performed this a good deal in March. I previewed it. I opened it at the University of Wisconsin this year. And a lot of the people told me they had not heard of all of the women. So I thought that was wonderful, that I had something new to bring. So I'll just share with the women and their lessons, because I think that they all have very, very good lessons. And that was the other criteria. I mean, there were a lot of very interesting, really bad women, like the former queen of Burma. Do you know she killed 97 people because her husband was 43rd in line for the throne?
Oh, my goodness.
She killed 97 people to get her husband on the throne.
Well, lovely.
But anyhow, so, I mean, she's very interesting, and she was gorgeous. But she just wasn't the right person for this play, but it was very hard to pick, because there are so many naughty, interesting women. But so the first women, I start going back, all the way back, and starting with the mother of all bad girls, Eve. And I call off stage, because I say, now, if you were Eve, what career would you choose? And Eve answers me, and I say, did I hear you right, Eve? Did you say stand-up comedy? And, of course, the audience laughs, and I say, that's a tough career choice, but Eve was always ready to try something new. And so Eve picks up this very cute T-shirt that I have with an apple with a bite out of it, and under it says bad women. and so Eve starts. Now, what happened was my playwright was very good, but she didn't have a great sense of humor. So I and my director had to rewrite Eve to make her funny, but we decided to turn her into a bad stand-up comic.
Ah.
So, I mean, like, she forgets her lines, and she's like, and then I mean, she, and, but she turns out to be really funny anyhow. Because she is kind of inept, and like she says, "Oh, what a great welcome! I feel like Oprah Winfrey at an American Booksellers Association conference." So I mean, but anyhow, so she's a lot of fun, and so Eve was the first bad woman. And then, I mean, I do come back on as Dorothy in between the women, and then I do get interrupted by Eleanor periodically. And the next bad woman, I don't know whether you've ever heard of her, this is George Machine Gun Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you have. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, she was quite a gal. Actually, do you know there was a comic strip of her?
No, I did not know that.
Someone sent it to me, an old comic of George, this is George Machine Gun Kelly. She was quite stunning. And she was in the 1920s.
Uh-huh.
She was. She trained her husband, who was very meek and mild, but good-looking. She turned him into a bank robber. And she says, "Without me, he'd never have made public enemy number one." So, and she was quite a gal, and she actually shot one of her lovers before she met George. I mean, I think she was devoted to George. But anyhow, so she's a lot of fun. And I have her at a press conference, and she's sitting. Because, you know, staging one of these, you don't want to do it in a boring way. You have to stage it in a way that's really interesting. So she's, and her lesson is now, oh, Eve's lesson. I left Eve's lesson out. Eve's lesson is that we shouldn't take ourselves too seriously, and we should not, you know, just not let things get to you. That a laugh and a shrug is a lot better than letting it get to you.
There you go.
So that's Eve's lesson. This is George Machine Gun Kelly's lesson is you can't be a shrinking violet if you want the world to know about your achievements. Because she was big into public relations and image building. She actually changed her name. She changed her name from Cleo because she felt that she knew too many floozies named Cleo.
Uh-huh.
She was real tough. She was from Texas. She changed her name from Cleo to Catherine, spelled with a K-A-T-H-R-Y-N.
Uh-huh.
Because she felt it was classier.
Uh-huh.
So she has a really, you know, important lesson because an awful lot of people, not only women, an awful lot of people are so shy about talking about their accomplishments.
That's true.
And I'm not saying you have to be a rah-rah, you know, obnoxious person just talking about how great you are. But you do need a little bit of public relations and image building if you're going to get ahead. I mean, I remember I had a boss once who would never say anything nice to me. And so I used to say, "Oh, now, Gregory, what did you think about that?" And he'd say, "Well, it's okay." I said, "Just okay?" And he'd say, "Well, you did a really good job." I said, "Thank you, Gregory." So, I mean, sometimes you just have to get noticed. You know, I've written a book that's not in print right now. It was called Marketing Yourself, and it was for job seekers.
Right.
And I told people when I went to colleges and talks all over the country on this subject, I said, you know, you have to be your own press agent because no one's going to do it for you. And if you don't keep a record of your accomplishments, there's no way you're going to get ahead. But if you keep a record of your accomplishments and you can translate them to dollar figures, you become more valuable in the minds of your employer. And so, I mean, we really do need to think about paying more attention to what we've accomplished in life.
Right, and you don't have to be an egomaniac to do that.
No.
You just simply make statements. This is what I've done.
Exactly.
1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So, she has a really good lesson. And, of course, in the middle of this, I get interrupted by Eleanor Roosevelt, and then I move on to Emperor Wu. Now, have you heard of Zetian?
No.
Uh-huh. Most people have not. And it's amazing that they have not, because she was emperor, not empress, emperor of China from 615 to 705 A.D., and she enjoyed many male concubines well into her 80s.
No, good for her.
Like past emperors. And she was quite ruthless in her achieving her role, but once she became emperor, she was a wonderful emperor. She lowered taxes. She built strong foreign relations. She engaged in successful wars. She was enormously successful. She was tolerant of all religions and scorned the idea that women were inferior to men. So she was quite a remarkable woman.
Wow.
And an enormous opportunist. I talk about her. I begin her chanting, Om Adi Adi Om, Om Adi Adi Om. And, I mean, I talk a little bit about Confucius and how he felt that a woman ruler was as un... Well, I'll do the accent because I worked hard on this one. A woman ruler is, Confucius believed, a woman ruler is as unnatural as a hen crowing at daybreak. And so she goes on to say, I have always preferred Buddhist philosophy and a prophecy that a woman would one day rule the empire. And then she says, girl, child though I was, I sat at the feet of my father and learned from him the precepts of the great general Sun Tzu. Opportunities multiply as they are seized. And that is her message.
Oh, my goodness.
She was the ultimate opportunist.
Awesome.
And we all need to be on the lookout for opportunities.
Oh, yeah, and then seize the moment.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. So, she's cool.
She's one of my favorites. She was really cool. Now, in the middle of these bad women, I also have a woman that really wasn't bad, but she was a slave. And she bought her freedom right before the Revolutionary War. And that's quite amazing that someone did that in those days. Now, she was from Massachusetts, but she actually won her freedom, and her name was Elizabeth Freeman. And I needed to in a play you have to have variation, so I needed to have a little variation. So she's a wonderful woman and lived a long, full life also and helped other people for the rest of her life. But her lesson is that knowledge is power.
There you go.
Because as she was a slave, she listened to everything and she heard them talking about the all men are born free and equal.
Right.
And she says, I knew that meant women too. After all, my name ain't Elizabeth Freeman for nothing.
All right.
So I love them all. I love all these women. They were so amazing. And we had Elizabeth Freeman, whose message was that knowledge is power. And it also helps to be courageous, because she was enormously courageous.
Oh, yeah, especially in those days.
Right.
Ooh, wow.
And then, of course, we have Mae West.
Oh, yes.
You can't have a play about bad women without Mae West.
Oh, absolutely not.
And Mae West's message is actually my favorite message, though, because having been brought up with so much guilt, I wished I'd been brought up like Mae West, who was brought up with no guilt. So that's my message, how wonderful it is to be brought up without guilt, and we should all try living our lives without guilt.
Yeah, she made no apologies for who she was.
That's
I thought that
right.
was awesome for
well,
her.
Well, you know, her mother told her. Her mother said, Mae, never feel guilty about your feelings or for liking boys. and as Mae West says, the best advice my mother ever gave me was going with lots of guys was better than going with just one. I took her advice. When I played Catherine the Great on Broadway, I had 300 lovers. I do the best I can in 2.5 hours. So she's quite a character.
Yes, she was. She was great. Just, you know, I remember watching her as a kid, you know. I used to think, oh, this woman is gutsy.
She was too much.
Great, great fun.
She was. She was great fun. You know, she says, a hat-check girl once said to me, goodness, Mae, what a gorgeous diamond. I said, sweetheart, goodness had nothing to do with it. So it is really funny, this play.
That sounds like something Mae would say.
Right. Well, I mean, I used, you know, some of her quotes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, most of them are public domain by now.
Oh, I would imagine, yes.
But, I mean, she has a whole slew of them. She says, personally, I like two kinds of men, domestic and foreign.
Yeah, that's a Mae West
right.
comment. Love it. absolutely astonishing.
So it is, as you can see, it really is a fun play.
Well, and it sounds like you just did not have a good time doing this either, Dorothy. I mean,
oh,
really, come on.
It's such a chore for me, that play.
Well, you know, and I have to commend you for doing work like this, because, you know, there's all kinds of women's organizations out there, and we know that, but this is something very unique, and I found it so interesting that I was like, I have to call her and find out what all this is about.
Well, do you know that when I did my first mailing a while back, I got so many calls just from my flyer. I had this Schnatzy flyer. I wound up doing 5 universities just from one mailing. Sight unseen.
Oh my goodness.
The title.
Hang on, you guys. We'll be right back with more of Dorothy in just a moment. I love my coffee. And during every Journeys with Rebecca radio show, I'm sipping on a big cup of my favorite coffee. You know, everyone who knows me knows how much I love my coffee. And I'm always drinking it from my super-sized Journeys logo coffee mug. It's a hefty 15-ounce ceramic mug, large, easy-grip handle, with the logo of Journeys with Rebecca emblazoned on the side. You know, it really is a beautiful cup. So join me with a big cup of Java and some wonderful conversation. You can find this special item at my web store. And for a limited time and for a very special price of only $16.99. So go to my website, journeyswithrebecca.com, and click on the web store link. Now that's like a good cup of coffee.
Schedule your private psychic reading with Rebecca, a truly gifted intuitive and clairvoyant, and the host of Journeys with Rebecca radio show. Call 1-888-958-2768. That's 1-888-958-2768. Where will your life's journey take you?
Hi, this is Rebecca. I'd like to take just a few seconds and thank all of my international listeners out there from Australia, Japan, Canada, South Africa, Bahrain, England, and Taiwan. You know, I would really love to hear from you guys. Let me know what you think of the shows or the topics. Email me at rebecca@journeyswithrebecca.com. And thanks for listening.
I know how important a dad can be. That's why my wife and I take our daughters on tour with us. Tuck them in at night, tell them stories, and sing them songs. My name's Tim McGraw, and I want to say, it doesn't take a superstar, but it takes a man to be a dad.
I don't know why they say grown men don't cry.
A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council. Call 1-800-790-DADS for free helpful information.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. We have had such a delightful time here today with Dorothy Leeds. And, you know, Dorothy, as we were... I was listening to you talking about this play. First of all, I'm gonna talk about that a little bit here for a minute. When I went on your website and I seen that, I was like, oh, I have absolutely got to find out more about this. So I think that if I feel like that there's probably other people that probably feel like that as well. And I've heard you talk today about putting this play on at different universities and things of that nature. So my question to you would be, how does one get Dorothy to come to wherever they're at and present this play amongst a group of people?
Well, I certainly women's studies at universities, I've performed it there for women's centers, women's organizations, the libraries, if they have somewhat of a budget would be nice. Companies. I've gone into companies who are trying to. In April, there's a special day set aside for administrative assistance. It's a perfect program for that. It's a perfect program for organizations who are trying to do programs for women in leadership. And actually, I would say a quarter of my audiences have been men. So men like to come too because they're interested in naughty women.
They might have a different concept of what
right.
that was all about, but.
Well, a couple of the women were quite promiscuous, so we please them too. I think that for the most part, it's schools, universities, women's centers, women's organizations, leadership programs, and programs that someone wants to do. It. Women's History Month is March of next year. I'm booking for them that already, people who want to do something special for women during Women's History Month. So those are the opportunities, and people can go on my website, which is www.dorothyleeds.com. But I've trademarked the title, so if you look up Good Lessons from Bad Women in History, which is in parentheses, the in history, you should get onto my website.
Well, so there is where somebody could find out how to contact you, and
exactly.
and then you would send out information, yes,
right.
yeah, and then they can follow up with it later.
Right.
Okay.
That
cool.
That would be the process.
Absolutely excellent. Now, speaking of your website, what else can we find there?
Well, there are some very helpful articles that you can download and learn about how to get a better job, how to ask more questions, how to be a better speaker. I've got I've got quite a lot of articles on my website. Plus, people can see an 8-minute video of me giving my talk, The Power of Questions. People can learn more about my other books, Power Speak and Smart Questions, The Essential Strategy for Successful Managers. It's a very user-friendly website, and hopefully people will come and take a look and want to read my books, or even better, invite me to come to speak to their organizations. I work with some of the top companies in the country. I work with Verizon and Boeing and IBM and the CIA and all kinds of interesting people.
The CIA?
Right.
Well, that's interesting. That's an understatement, I think.
That is true. They were very hard to find, these guys. The CIA. Difficult to find. They kept changing their emails and their voicemails and their everything mails.
Are you kidding?
Nope. It was a riot trying to get the program together to do for them.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess hence so is the CIA.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Well,
that's just a screen. What's that?
They've got to be secretive, I guess.
I guess to tell you, if they don't even keep their same emails. Now, that's pretty interesting. I like that little tidbit of information there, Dorothy. Well, I'd like to just take a couple more minutes. We have some time left here. Let's get back to a couple of your books. And by the way, I will make the statement here that your website is actually very easy to use. Easy to find the information. You don't have to dig through 100 things in order to get to what it is someone's looking for on your website. You also do have some really great articles in there. Some of them that I've actually read myself or have been extraordinarily helpful for me. And, of course, I've turned other people on to it as well. And just as a quick reminder for those of you who are out there listening, if you didn't happen to get Dorothy's website address, you can go to my website. If you're listening, you're probably already there. And just click on the link, and it will take you right to Dorothy's website. And so once you become, this show is actually over and done with within 24 hours, then you go on the past guest links, which you are there from the previous times. So that is always there for people. So if you can't find her right away, don't worry about it, because you can find her from my website at any time.
Thank you for having me.
Well,
to my website. That's very wonderful of you.
Well, you know, you've just got some real down to earth, absolutely fantastic guidance, information, help for people that just need a little encouragement. That just need maybe they just need something worded to them a little differently. They already knew the answers, but somebody else saying that to them, they go, oh. You know, I can do this.
Right.
You know, I can be more than I am.
Right. Well, you know what they say, Rebecca. The difference between can and can't is just an apostrophe and a T.
That's true. Absolutely true. But, you know, the first time you were on was about the seven powers of questions, right?
Right?
And that book and that whole conversation has stuck with me through all this time. You're never really too far from my thoughts when...
So what were the things that stuck with you the most?
Just the fact that you had put that into a book form. I mean, people think, you know, I think we covered this last time, but people think that having communication with people is actually communicating. And it's not always. Sometimes we're speaking at each other. Mm-hmm. And we get frustrated because we're not really paying attention to what we're saying. And so the other person doesn't really get a good grasp on what it is that you're wanting to know about. So if you put things into a question form, you're more apt to get the information that you're seeking. But I find a lot of people are they're almost afraid to ask a question. And I hear it every day in my line of work. Well, I don't want to ask a stupid question. No such thing.
Right. Well, now, let me just qualify that. I think any sincere request for information or knowledge or clarification is not stupid.
Right, so and that's how I meant
that. However, people do not always ask questions to get information.
No.
People, I mean, you know, when I do my program, PowerSpeak,
right.
I ask the audience, when you open it up to questions as a speaker, open up the audience, or at a press conference, for example, not all those questions are for information. Sometimes they're to make your point. Sometimes they're because you want to talk. Sometimes it's to show the speaker up or the president up or whoever up. And so those kinds of questions I don't consider to be smart questions.
No, and they're not valid either
right.
A lot of times. A lot of times people just raise their hand just to have their voice being heard.
Right. I just have to qualify that.
Sure.
You have to qualify what most questions that are requesting information, clarification, understanding, caring, getting someone to open up, all of those are the wonderful
right.
uses of questions.
Absolutely.
But questions, and if you ask too many closed-ended questions, like if I say to you, Rebecca, how old are you? Where do you live? How much money do you make? What's your job? Who are you married to? How old is he? I mean, if I asked you those 7 or 8 questions, you'd hate me in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Because you can't do that. You have to ask more open-ended questions. Could you tell me a little bit about yourself? I'd really like to know more about you.
Exactly, and that's what your book is all about,
exactly.
Dorothy. And I wish you so well on this journey with your play, and I hope anybody out there is listening will at least visit the website. And if you don't know of anybody, or if you don't can't utilize Dorothy, please, I know that there's somebody out there that can. So please give her a call. And Dorothy, thank you so much, and we will be in touch.
It was wonderful to talk with you.
Well, blessings to you, my dear.
And to you.
Find out more about a show topic or guest. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
For the people in our military, it's a time of sacrifice and duty. That's why all 4 military aid societies have joined together to form the Armed Forces Relief Trust to help military families cope with financial and medical emergencies at home. With so many serving overseas, the need is greater than ever. You can learn more and donate at www.afrtrust.org. A message from the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Journeys is always looking for informed, entertaining, and passionate guests. Email your guest suggestion to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. I'd like to thank my guests tonight for sharing their wonderful information and knowledge with us. And a special thanks goes out to you, the listeners. Now, you know, the guests I have on air are given the opportunity to share their viewpoints or ideas. Now, you and I have the opportunity of choice in regards to those ideas or viewpoints. Be sure to check in next week for more enlightening educational talk and discoveries. This is Rebecca of Journeys with Rebecca. Until we meet again, where will your life's journey take you? Many blessings and good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.